And yes.
Okay. We're both recording.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Rob, you are an intentional man. I do not think that you can also be impish, to use your words.
Mm-hmm.
But that impishness also comes from a place of intentionality, I suspect. Am I correct in my suspicions?
Sure. It's like more playful intentionality.
Playful intentionality. So, all of this was on my mind the other day when you posted an image to Facebook, a drawing that you did for me,
mm-hmm.
and said, "Happy birthday, Jersey."
Mm-hmm.
Knowing full well that I do not publicize my birthday. You SOB. So you were pulling a Jersey on me.
Mm-hmm.
You literally did the same thing to me that I did to you a few weeks back, mm-hmm. when I said that thing about we have a responsibility to post things, weren't mm-hmm. you? That's what you were doing, weren't you?
Oh, well, yeah. And I mean, and what's wonderful is I had, I would say it's an implied, not that you would expect this, whatever, but it seemed it would be culturally appropriate for, you know, reciprocation, right? Where you were so generous, actually, for two birthdays of mine now, where you made a cool drawing for me. The one, it was still like both of us were like, oh, we're kind of secret about this. And like, I was like, oh, is it bragging? This is awkward. This is so awesome. I want to share it. And like, maybe I will at some point, but like, and what's funny is it's literally hanging up. I look over my monitor, boom, right there. And, yeah. And I love that one. It's just, that one was a physical one. So it gets to hang up right there anyway. But where this year you posted a happy birthday of, you know, what for me a couple months back, and Eddie bursting out of the ground, a tribute to, you know, the Live After Death, album cover and tour. And anyway, super cool. But also I felt the door was open. And through that door, my impish, I had an impish look going,
Because you could have just emailed it to me. You could have just emailed it to me, quote unquote, respecting my wishes about, you know, sharing that information.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, so let me describe my emotional travels over this simple action that you did.
Mm-hmm.
So funny, because like there was like this instant flash of like, oh, why did he have to post that publicly? I don't tell people my birthday is. That lasted about maybe like half of a second.
Which is fair. I have no idea. I mean, there is a negative aspect of this. I'm actually sorry about I thought it might go kind of wrong, but I thought the stakes were relatively low because the planet goes around the sun for everybody.
Exactly. And so, like I said, it was just a flash of like it was a knee jerk, because I've operated this way for such and such a time. But then mm-hmm. after that initial flash, I was like, I see what he did. I know what he's doing. He's getting me to be more forthright and honest with people in the way that I've encouraged him to. And part of he's highlighting for me like a jiu-jitsu trick. Here's the weak spot. When I poke there, you go, ah. So, you know,
it's not that Machiavellian, you know. It's like
I know, yeah. but that was the effect it had, yeah, right?
Totally.
And it made me realize that this thing that I thought had high stakes doesn't have high stakes. And what's more is that there were people who were delighted to find out when I was born, so that they could say nice things to me, right? And then initially, it started out with like Ryan Estrada. Ryan Estrada was like the big culprit in this because he saw
it.
He's like,
yeah, talk about impish.
Because then he goes to Twitter and Facebook and he's like, hey, it's Jersey's birthday. Why does he not have his birthday on social media? Is his phone number on there for crying out loud? And first of all, my phone number is only visible to people I'm friends with. And second of all, as I explained to Ryan, it's like, well, the philosophy is thus. Feel free to call me friends. But you don't have to remember my birthday, right? I'm not going to be that guy who's like, hey, it's my birthday next week. But if you need me, call, right? That's what I think I was saying with that. But Ryan had clearly pointed out that like there was like a weird mismatch in what privacy setting or what I was being private about.
Mm.
So initially, I just got a few nice messages from people who I've been friends with for a long time who didn't know my birthday because I never told them, who were like, finally, I know, you know, and emailing me and And then it kind of blew over. It was just kind of like Raina Telgemeier said something like, I can't believe you let it leak, you know, because I didn't even know. I'm like, yeah, I know you didn't know because I don't tell people. Like, a well-meaning friend is responsible for the leak.
I know.
This isn't me, you know, going out and going, hey, nudging everybody.
Yeah.
But then it kind of blew over, and then it was calm all afternoon. And then in the evening, I started getting some really nice fan art from people, like where Ashley Knapp did this awesome comic about the characters from the front where they were all spot on. She wrote the Brigadier General's dialogue. Now, if anybody is familiar with the front, the Brigadier General is the hardest character to write because he talks in this faux Shakespearean $500 word dialogue where I would literally write his dialogue in regular English and then I would go to a thesaurus and then rewrite his dialogue in inappropriately large words. So, but she got his dialogue spot on. It was a lovely thing. It was so sweet. And when I got that, I was like, you know, when I withhold information like my birthday or whatever, I'm closing the door on positive interactions, right? I'm closing the door on possible positive interactions. Now, part of the reason I wasn't public about it is because I don't want to get that flood of insincere, hey, Facebook told me it's your birthday, happy birthday, right? I know they mean well, mm-hmm. but it's not that meaningful of a gesture, right? And that's one of the reasons why, for like people I care about, I try to do like drawings or something. I try to show that you mean enough to me that I took time out of my day to spend thinking about you on making this thing, right? That's what that's about. It's not about like, look how good I can draw Eddie. It's about saying like, hey, Rob, I thought about you for 10 minutes today, right?
Mm-hmm. Super sweet.
Whereas just getting like the happy birthday 12 exclamation points, not as meaningful. Very nice, but not as substantial, right?
Yeah.
So I'm closing myself off to that, which is fine. But I'm also closing myself off to the people who really want to share a meaningful interaction. But like the thing Ashley did, that was more than 10 minutes of time. She worked on that thing, and that was super cool and meant so much. And so then that's when I finally said, okay, I'm going to say something now. So this is what you started. So like I went from this cycle of me going, yeah, yeah, friends. Now you know. Okay, let's all move on. I don't want to talk about it anymore. To me saying, okay, public, today's my birthday. This person did a nice thing for me. So cool. And then it started a second cycle of people going, happy birthday, 12 exclamation points, which was nice
yeah,
to hear.
Exactly.
But anyway, at the end of the day, the funniest thing was that it all started with you doing that one simple thing in this impish way, which got me to readjusted me. You realigned me on the tracks, so to speak. So well played.
We provide that kind of feedback for each other. And yeah, I think that's... I suppose it's part of being, I mean, whatever. It's one of those things where like, is this coming out of my mouth? I'm already saying, don't say stupid stuff like this. But like, to me, part of being a friend is like, it's a very active thing where you're exploring and learning about whatever. This is a big philosophy kind of thing. Like, so I'm like, I'm really into the idea of everyone being as holistic of a human being as they're interested and capable of being. But then when we connect with one another, our relationship is yet another entity that's now connecting us. And that is something that we also need to, without some attention and energy and learning and exploration like that, it's not possible to really... connect as well or have a robust connection, you know. Yeah. the relationship is a third thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah
anyway, so I was exploring and I'm glad it worked out. Well,
it did. I mean it wasn't I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. I was dramatizing this for the purpose of making a point because it was not this emotional roller coaster that I was on. But it is something But it is something I've felt in the past very strongly about, right? We don't know He-Man's birthday. He jumps on the cat and gets out of town as soon as the problem is solved. He doesn't stick around for a parade. And it comes back to that Taoist principle of you don't bask in your accomplishments, right? You do the work and you let it go. Let it live, right? Don't you know, polish it and nuzzle it like some kind of, you know, kangaroo baby. So that was part of, it was baked into that whole worldview thing that I've kind of adhered to, is this idea of like, don't make it about you, Jers. Even though you're talking all the time, try to make it not about you as much as you can. If you do talk about you, use yourself as example, but not to say, how interesting am I, right? At least that's what I shoot for. So the birthday thing was tied into that, but you pointed out that what I like about this, and this is what friends are. Yeah, you're right. Friends are supposed to do this. You pointed out that absolutes are so dangerous. They're very dangerous. They can blind you to things, right? To say like, well, no, you don't stick around for thanks. That can prevent you from providing somebody else with the opportunity of expressing your value to them, right? Mm. When Ashley made that thing for me, and when you did that drawing for me, that was as much about you as it was about me. That was about saying, this, there's a connection between us. I'm expressing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when Ashley did that comic about the characters in the front, she got to express what that comic meant to her and what my contributions to whatever have meant to her,
mm-hmm.
and then got to reflect that back to me, thereby making her own contribution to the overall landscape, right?
Mm-hmm.
That does sound hippy-dippy. I don't care. This is extra lead. We get to say what we want.
It is, but, yeah. Well, it's cool. I mean, so that is, like, it, I think there is a, yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is where people who think about stuff can get a bad rap. And it's not like when you think about stuff, you're always infinitely spinning and whatever. I mean, we go and we're holistic people where we do things out of reflex and out of, you know, silliness and make mistakes and all that kind of stuff where, you know, like, yeah, anyway, I don't want to go off. That's such an interesting set of tangents to go off on. But like
the, we got time, Rob. We can go long today if we want to, because it's the holidays after all.
Cool. Let's see. Which we may come back, but like, I was saying all that by way of looking at how, if you share a thing, that is part of you that you did put out in the world, and the possibility of making connections to whatever end, right? People can react to it. And how do you react to their reactions and whatnot? And like, do you stay connected and aware of these things, or do you ignore them, or how do you relate? And I'm not in that. There's a whole lot of interesting things in that stage of making stuff, something where if you, it's past where you've made it and now you share it, all that stuff. And likely one of the reasons that we do share the things is some form of service or acknowledgement, you know, from those that we're seeking to connect with. And so that could be there. Oh yeah, cool. The book got really good sales. That's a form of it. But yeah, I mean, that's not the only form. I mean, the time that people invest in it. So people who run things as a website, they can get that feedback just by watching stats typically, right? They can get that feedback based on comments or it can take tons of different forms, fan art.
Yeah.
But then also seeking, other acknowledgement, because we're all people, right? So it's like, oh, cool. Yeah, you have a birthday. Neat. I want to acknowledge that. And you and your work, right? And which I think is very different than the whole doing your work and letting go, because I think the letting go, my interpretation of that is the conclusive expectations, right? And trying to somehow push those into reality.
Yes, which is anti-Taoist, right?
Yeah.
It's imposing my expectations on the thing. That letting go is not just releasing responsibility or association with it. Letting go is letting go of releasing oneself of the expectations you had for the thing in the first place. Let it, put it out there, find out what happens to it. If it comes back and reflects to you in a different way, be ready for that, and the whole Taoist principle of water, you know, let be flexible to move around that or flow with it or whatever the moment requires of you. So yeah, by me trying to adhere to that principle in a very strict and somewhat flat way, I was actually behaving against the principle.
Right. And which we all, every single one of us, I mean, so I don't know, we do the podcasting, we do think about things a lot, we think about how we present and share things a lot, and we practice it. So sometimes I think when you do this kind of thing, you can get a voice of, I don't know, so much affirmation of a certain approach that can seem not reproachable, or at least you assume it's infallible or whatever, but like, you know, yeah. That's... It's just way not the case. I mean, we know that unexpected things can come from doing something impish. For instance, I had no idea, like that there would be a sort of like I had an imp wingman, had no idea, right? Ryan Estrada was like, swoop, this is an opportunity, and it was funny and. Oh my word. Cause at first I had a reaction to that going, oh boy, what did I do? It's like, I can get a rap. This is one of the tangents. I'll try to just slip it in quick is of like, I try to be intentional, but you know what? I'm also like really into the idea of like listening to and my emotional response to stuff where I'm like, my gut says this sucks. Like, now I want to observe it where I'm like, what's going on here? Right. My gut says, this is awesome. What is going on here? You know? So like, and trusting both basically anyway. But like I had a big, moment when I saw Ryan share that outside of Facebook where I made that an intentional choice where I'm like, we'll see, maybe it's, you know, just a little private sharing here, you know, see what happens. And, went past that pretty quick.
Yeah. And it was very uncomfortable for me. It was very uncomfortable to have a bunch of people tell me very nice things, right? Feel like I had a lot of attention on me, specifically for me, right? Having attention on me about comics when I do comics are great, or having attention on me when I'm talking about art, I'm leaning into art, that's different. You get my drift, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I'm advocating for something in that situation.
Yeah, it's for, I mean, maybe that's another aspect of the relationship thing, because now you're relating to the shared purpose as opposed to like a direct interpersonal relationship kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's, I'm just kind of gut checking that one. I don't know. But yeah.
No. I've joked in the past that I have intimacy issues, not that kind. But like feeling like there's like somebody giving me their whole attention just because of who I am. You know, that is something where I get a little, I'm a Midwesterner, you know, I get a little squeamish when that happens. So yeah, you made me confront something and that was cool. I'm grateful. I'm very grateful for that.
Well,
anyway,
super cool. So, I hope you had a super awesome birthday.
It was good. We went to my favorite German restaurant and, where it's this place called Metzger's in Ann Arbor, and it's like best food in town. It's by my reckoning, and even as a vegetarian, German restaurant, you're vegetarian going to a German restaurant? Yes, indeed. I'm also of Eastern European descent, and I love my heavy, buttery, pickled foods. So I don't know if I took you there when you came out to Ann Arbor, Rob.
No. Wait,
you'd remember it's like old timey German place. It's like all dark wood and place just reeks of sauerkraut and butter.
No. It was some big, cool grillish place with like thick tables and stuff.
And was that Zingerman's?
Zingerman's, yeah. I was like, exactly. Because I was like, hey, that's kind of like my last name. Anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Zingerman's is pretty great too. And that's actually probably more well known attraction in Ann Arbor. But Metzger's is kind of just outside of town. But it's like, that's like, Ann and I go there enough to where the manager recognizes us, cool. Which that doesn't happen in any of the other restaurants in town. So, anyway, yeah, it was a good birthday. I had a good time. Nobody got hurt, which is all I can ask for. And I got to have like a little bit of a, you know, I got to grow a little bit as a person. Oh, that's terrible, but I did. So anyway, Did you want to talk about your trip, or do you want to talk about?
Yeah. Well, let's see.
People know you went on a trip because you posted photos.
Yeah, it's more of a teaser, I guess we can acknowledge. I don't know what I got. Let's see. So I suppose some of it's you know, for my day job, I went on a trip, and it was to San Francisco to meet a lot of teams that were doing really cool things, and I had a opportunity that I mean, I don't know. It's not in my common experience to be visiting the kind of places that I went. And but it was fascinating, and I learned a ton, and I got to go to places that, like, you know, Google and Facebook and Heroku and GitHub and all that. And I was gonna do, like, I'll probably do another couple of picture sharing things, whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is, this is one of those things where it's like, when I'm like super busy during anything, and I capture an interesting moment or photo or note, this is that newsworthy bias that I mentioned on the Polytechnicast, where I'm like, well, no need to share it now because the moment's done, right?
Yeah.
And
people post on Instagram, they'll put latergram. I'm like, why? You don't need to do that, because I don't know where you are when you posted this. And like, it's just a thing happened to you. Just share the thing. You know, that's fine. But it's weird. We do. I suffer from the same thing. If it happened 2 weeks ago, maybe I don't need to talk about it anymore. It's old.
So, I mean, I've got, there's some cool photos. I mean, nothing secret or whatever that, that I can share. But I mean, yeah, all I can say, I should really think through that more to approach it as a topic. So,
okay.
Yeah.
We can talk about it as a topic on
the whole, like, show, my words, my opinions are my own, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right. Good. Okay. Well, let me answer me this. Were there robots? Did you see robots?
Yes. But
was there a person driving it? I guess it wouldn't be a robot then.
No. I mean, I saw some amazing projects and whatnot too, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
the picture in my head of the Google campus is like the Death Star, not like the evil part, but like just like seeing machines walking around doing things all the time.
Yeah, no, not as much of that. I mean, so a lot of it, you know, like places like GitHub and Heroku, they automate everything and do, you know, so there's a lot of command line tools I saw, but yeah, that kind of thing.
No little wheelie robot bringing you drinks or anything like that.
No, not quite like that. But no, it was neat. I mean, so yeah, anything from I'm understating whatever. I mean. Cause just to talk constantly, amazing, awesome, boo. I mean, it really, it was super informative as far as some of the things that approaches to collaboration and whatnot. So that some things that I'm like, oh wow, that is that's an area I need to study now to, you know, up my kung fu and contribute back to, you know, my day job and get informed for other things. For lean into art and other stuff too. I mean, it's just, you know, ongoing learning and improvement kind of stuff.
But you went, okay. I just didn't want to leave it untouched that you got to go.
No,
to Google,
cool.
And
no,
Facebook.
I'm happy to acknowledge it. And but I'm just like, what to share there? I think one thing that would be an example of a takeaway I'd love to explore at some point, but am not ready to explore, would be the, you know, it's interesting the approaches to collaboration in some even large environments that, you know, so you think of a large organization, a lot of times it's like kind of like an army where you get orders from way up above and they flow down a chain, and eventually wherever you are on a chain, some orders flow to you. But then how much agency and freedom do you have in responding to those and whatnot is, you know, varies based on whatever the culture is, wherever you're working. And a lot of what I was exposed to was more, very wildly, but very intentionally and purposefully collaborative and trusting and egalitarian approaches to collaborate, even on complex things. Things that people assume, well, you could totally do that on your, you know, proof of concept stuff. You can make a website, whatever, man. I'm doing, you know, I don't know, name something hard, right? Building a car, or I'm doing some super hard 3D graphics, or I'm doing like a big, you know, I don't know, some big network systems that has, you know, tens of thousands of users, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just interesting to observe that, like, assuming that people need to give up freedom to achieve complexity seems probably totally false. And I'd love to explore that. But I also am still, like, unboxing my observations from the whole thing, too.
You just got back. Yeah. I mean, yesterday.
And again, the companies, I didn't even list all the companies. It was just, it was being immersed in so much. And you know, I'm whatever, like, I have that kind of mindset where I know I come off of, like, I'm so happy to learn. Look at, you know, like, I'm here. And look, what do you people know? And like, yeah. Oh, here's the thing we tried. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but, like, you know, what do you think and all that? And, like, getting excited about people, you know, thinking about and working out these kinds of, you know, approaches about making stuff. And I really do love that. Like, maybe to a weird extreme, like, you know, speaking of relationships, like, most all my relationships are somehow related to making stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, I'm great. Actually, I'm very comfortable with that.
Yep. I prefer it. I do have friendships where it's not based on us making a thing together, but the ones where I find the most satisfaction and pleasure in are the ones where we're teamed up on making a thing, you know, or we're making our own things, but we have very similar approaches and we use each other's friendship as a basis for checking in on each other's progress.
Yeah, I mean, so you're sharing a journey. It's like artists sharing their journey and then finding, you know, the syncing up more often as you each are on your journeys, like, you know, what kind of things you're dealing with, how you're accomplishing them and all that stuff. That's the stuff I like. And so, yeah, I probably will sound like, you only have positive things to say on that topic. Well, that's why I think about it and analyze it. But yeah, I am pretty darn biased there.
That's another funny, like, tangential thing to bring up is, like, that is a funny criticism to level at people. I think, like, it's like, I've gotten not a lot, but I've gotten the occasional, like, boy, Jersey, you lay it on thick with your guests on Comics Are Great. Like, you love every guest who comes on Comics Great. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Because I only bring on people on the show whose work I really enjoy. I'm not going to bring on somebody whose work I'm like mild about or like don't care about or don't like.
Exactly. So you make that comic.
Good for you.
You know? All right.
Yeah, that's not interesting listening. People are going to respond to somebody being excited about something. So I'm going to bring on people whose work I'm very excited about. And then, yeah, I'm going to be effusive about that. You're misunderstanding the whole situation when you say, boy, you only have nice things to say about that person. Duh, right? Rob, you only have nice things to say about people who are open and communicative and collaborative and responsible and free and with, like, really strong ethoses, even if you don't 100% agree with the ethos sometimes, but the fact that they haven't fully formed, you know, gosh, you got a lot of nice things to say about that, dummy.
You just always say nice things about that. And it's like, well, yes. Yes. That's kind of the point.
Yeah. Well, would that be considered a fallacious criticism? You know,
it's circular reasoning and all that. But we all have biases. And I think that's, again, like, so a whole holistic approach or whatever. Try to keep informing your biases so they actually work well for you, you know? So get into the kind of trouble that you like to get into.
That's good. All right. We're going to go long, Rob, because I promised on the Lean Into Art cast that we would talk about things to make in time for the holidays.
Cool. Yeah.
You compiled this list.
What's that? And I did. Yeah. I compiled a list and I was thinking about different things I've done over the years and stuck mostly to that. And And I don't know if this would be of use, but it'd be fun to, like, maybe if this is part of a conversation we end up eventually we take out of Extra Lean or whatever, or this is like something for ongoing, maybe, you know, throughout next year, where it's like, what are some of the kinds of things that you make also? And it's so, like, you know, you're into some sort of visual storytelling, but like you're also doing this was an interesting, like, sub theme in addition to sharing a few different, you know, maybe these are interesting things to make that that you can do on kind of an intense timeline. But also, what's comfortable and okay, what feels all right? Because, I mean, so when you do illustration, for instance, you likely will run into people at some point that are like, will you do illustration for me for free? Because we're buddies, and because I want, you know, whatever. I want to carry that in my wallet. I want to, you know, hang it up in my locker. I want to, you know, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the implication is like, well, you like to do that thing, and so give me one of those things. I wonder if, sorry for the long, long phrasing of this question, because I'm going to be asking you this. How do you feel about, well, yeah, no, even though you already revealed it, so like, how do you, but when are you, so maybe more interesting, when are you comfortable with making drawings for people for free? You know what I mean? Is that something you consider? And
it is absolutely, it's something I consider because I've done it. But my only rule, the only hard and fast rule on this is I get to decide when it happens. It's a form of affection that only I can decide where it falls. And it may be something where I offer it before it's done, right? Mm-hmm. So like I was having coffee with some friends in town, and it's a group of guys who are all people who, I was in my mind, I was classifying these guys as guys I don't make things with. But they're all people who make things happen in town, like people, like event organizers and stuff. And that's how I got involved, is because I did an Ignite talk, and that's how I met a lot of these guys. These are the guys who put on the Ignite talks in town. They also put on like little tech conferences, and then I'm like the comics representative of this triumvirate, you know? Like I'm the guy who puts on comics events in town. And they were talking about a new event that they wanted to build. And I got very excited about it when they were describing it, and I said, if you guys do that, and if you go with this name, because they were, you know, brainstorming names, and I just sort of like, again, impishly kind of said, like, if you go with this name because I like it, I'll do the logo for free. I won't charge you guys. Because, like, in the past, they've asked me to do logos, and I was like, oh, well, I'll do a logo and it costs you this much, right? But I may offer it for free in a sense of, you know, I like the idea, I like what you guys are trying to do with it, and I get to offer it. If they ask me, then I get to decide. Am I going to charge or am I going to do it for free? They don't get to ask for free. I get to decide whether or not it's free. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond, because I do think of it as a form of emotional currency. I'm investing my time into this, and my time is exceedingly valuable to me, especially having just celebrated a birthday. I'm getting older. Time is being more and more precious all the time. So yeah, when I draw something for somebody, nobody gets to decide the price except me, and it's negotiable, right? But nobody gets to ask me for a free drawing ever. Does that make sense?
But yeah, exactly. And especially didn't expect it to be complied to or what have you. Okay, so that makes
cost
sense.
Friction. That's cost friction with family members. I will say that. Like, I've had people get very, very offended by that attitude. You know, well, what are you, a capitalist? Well, yeah. So anyway, where are you going with that? Sorry, Rob.
I just wanted to touch on that because I think it's an interesting facet of okay, you're going to make a gift for someone.
Yeah.
And then if that making a gift is, you know, doing something that you're doing for your primary or profession you're pursuing, right? You're engaging in trade in that in one context, and yet in another, it is just, it's a thing you made for free. And so it's both priceless and worthless, you know, maybe, right? So like if you're, so that once you assign that price, you know, like it creates a something to consider. Whereas if you always drew things for free, never thought of it, whatever, or you always, you know, I don't know, made clay pots for free or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
It's a thing to consider.
It does get really muddled when you start thinking about, well, I make stuff on the web for free, yeah, right? And I give it away that way, hoping to find an audience and all that stuff. Because I was going to jump in and say, well, I've got this rule that the free stuff I make is only for people or things I deeply care about, right?
But so, you also said the it's about you decide when, right?
So, it's about my decision. So, yeah. So then somebody could say, like, well, you put comics on the web for free. Does that mean you care deeply about everybody? Well, first of all, I try to.
Or, hey, second of all, we do a lot of podcasting for free, you know.
For free. Yeah, that's right. But it's for something we care about, and it's something that we're passionate about, right?
Exactly.
It gets complicated, though. So, but yeah, but we get to decide that anyway. So.
So cool. I think that's a great observation. You know, we get to decide that. So I'm not implying go make a bunch of free stuff for everyone, whatever. But like, you know, here's the thing to consider as we talk about some stuff that you might want to make.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like the obvious one, I think at the top of the list is essentially drawing for someone. Right. And, I like the idea. I often will try to, you know, caption something or whatnot. So it's either ends up as like a single panel comic or like an illustration with text juxtaposed somehow. And that lets me somehow, you know, put out a quick message. I don't have to elaborate a giant story. But it allows me to do that. So to essentially fulfill creating a gesture, and Now I can share it. Sometimes what I've done with that too is I would, like last year I made for a couple different friends, I did, essentially a, like kind of a sketch card size, like almost like, but like a 1/4 of an 8.5 by 11 page. So like a little bit larger sketch card, of some artwork, did super high resolution scans of them, and then printed out on cardstock. And then I used Copic markers to color them.
Do I have one of them right there?
You actually do have one of them right there. Yeah, the little collection.
Right next to my Atari.
That's cool. Yeah, I did a couple of those. And
so they're still personalized. They're still unique,
mm-hmm.
But that's actually a great idea. I was just trying to figure out what I was going to do for my holiday card this year. That's a really good idea. Then we can just color all of them individually, so they'll still be unique.
Exactly. And if you want to do, so it's part of its time saving. So what I did for each of those is, I actually generated a bunch of sketch cards of cute art when I was trying to, you know, brainstorm some different stories and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, so I had those that weren't shared or whatnot. So they're kind of like more fresh also. So I was trying to pick things that I hadn't publicly shared. And then, even though actually one of them I actually did share, but I thought, nah, whatever, it's a cool drawing. I also did that big detailed drum walker dude drawing. I don't know if anyone would remember that by me mentioning it, but I did a colored version of that. But it was, from a high res scan. But it saved me a lot of time. It's like, oh, cool, I get to invest some personal time into this and expression. But
yeah. But yeah, I did a
quick
crayons. Crayons would work for that too, right?
Like totally.
One of the things, yeah. I love coloring with crayons, and there's something kind of playful and fast about it, but also feels very hand done, right?
Yeah.
You feel the artist's hand was there. So I think that's part of it too, is like, you know, because I also get cards from some cartoonist friends where they clearly designed a really nice card and then had it printed at some place like Godprint or Kinko's or something in the mail. So I got the same one as everybody else. It's a beautiful card, but and it's got a nice thing written on the back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes like having that artist's hand on it too just makes it feel that much more.
It does. Like that that handcrafted it's a little extra statement. So yeah, making them the mass produced cards, that's all right too, right? I mean, the whole, I mean, yeah, you made a custom card and got it printed up and stuff. But like, there is some little extra magic in that someone else's, you know, that the giver's hand was affecting that, you know?
Yeah. In both situations, that's true, but there is our monkey brains, our monkey brains, like, put a little bit of extra value on the one where if we feel like they handled it a little bit longer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. You know, it's gotta be a monkey brain thing of like somehow how we perceive value or something. Right.
Right. Yeah. Like that time into it, like, oh, this must have taken a long time to make. Right. Going back to a Comics Great episode 75, I think, and I was talking with Dean Tripp about his "You'll Be Safe Here" poster. You remember that with like all those heroes and the Batman and little boy? Mm-hmm. And I asked him, how long did that take? When I should have asked, how fun was that to make? Right? I went to the common assumption about value based on effort and time, whereas what it should have been is what was your experience? What was your intent? What was, you know, where were your emotions in this thing, right? That's where the value is to me. So, well, I like to think it is anyway.
Yeah, I mean, because, well, right, there is, even though we're, you know, if someone does answer a specific value for that time, it's so incredibly individual. It's like if someone says that took me, you know, 5 years or 5 minutes, like, what does it matter? If you may think it's worth less now because you're like, that took you 5 years.
Right. Right. Yeah. As somebody who's given me a hard time for drawing faster than him. Right.
I know. I do that a lot.
And I try to deflect it every time. I'm like, the time doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how fast or slow you do it, as long as you are doing it intentionally and enjoying it. Right.
Exactly. I am. I suppose you could. Yeah. It's it's probably both. Respect the skill and envy the skill.
Sure, sure. So, and it's human. Yeah. It's human. Like I said, it's a monkey brain thing. Yeah. So, okay, what else we got? Lightbox Play-Doh.
Yeah, so this is a kind of a weird one that maybe it was a test to the person I gave it to, but like you can go to craft stores and find like the... I found essentially like thick frames that I guess they're called a lightbox. That I assume if you collect,
or like shadow box, right?
Shadow box. Oops, yeah, I used the wrong word. Even I don't even know what it is. Like I found a thing that was shaped like a way I thought I could use it.
Yeah, it basically looks like a picture frame, but it's like deep. Like
exactly.
You can like it's like 4 inches or so deep. I don't know how many centimeters that is, but
so you can put objects in essentially in a picture frame, and if you find some way to affix those objects, either, you know, to something you put in the picture frame as a background or whatever, or to the thing itself, the frame itself, you can effectively make like a little diorama of whatever, action figures mixed with, you know, paper cutout, you know, comic balloons, whatever, word balloons. You could do, you know, combine that with the illustration thing. But also then if you want to add 3D elements, actually, it's not Play-Doh. So this is the other thing. Like I
modeling clay.
Was it modeling clay? There you go. It was modeling clay. Play-Doh probably wouldn't last. It would smell nice for a while.
Yeah.
And then, probably
it would dry out and turn into basically like crumbly chalk is what happens with Play-Doh when you leave it out.
Exactly.
It gets all desiccated and withered. So yeah, you want to use something with oil in it, like modeling clay. And the benefit of using modeling clay, get transported back to fourth grade. When was the last time you smelled modeling clay, Rob?
Oh yeah, exactly. It was really fun. Actually, I remember that. It was super fun. Like such a powerful, familiar smell. Like Play-Doh, but a totally different smell.
Totally different. Yeah. Whatever kind of evil chemicals are in that stuff. It's like suddenly I was wearing that green smock again, and I was in fourth grade making things, or probably more like first grade, making things out of clay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's fun for that reason.
Yeah.
But yeah. Totally. I like this too. Storytelling in three dimensions, right?
Mm-hmm. That, let's see. Yeah, exactly. Anything you'd want. I mean, like going literally diorama, combining, I don't know, whatever, little pieces of plants and rocks and whatever the heck. But it's a fun way. Like that doesn't have to take that long. I mean, that could become your hobby for 5 years, but right. It doesn't have to. Simple objects. Like when I made one, I combined like an illustration and I made letters actually out of modeling clay.
Mm. That's kind of cool. Yeah. I mean, and you could, yeah, I like the idea of also combining it with like things that the person may be interested in. Like for instance, you know, I've got a friend who is really, really, really into G.I. Joe figures. Get some cheap G.I. Joe figures, incorporate them into a scene, you know, in a funny way. Well, actually, he does that for me every year now that I think about it. And hold on. I'm going to see if I can grab it real quick.
Super cool. All right. This is a something from the living shelf. But what's funny, it's the above. It was out of camera. It's off camera. It was above the SDF-1.
So this has never been seen. So my buddy and I have like this ongoing internal joke about Sergeant Slaughter and how much we love Sergeant Slaughter, and me in particular, Sergeant Slaughter being the character from G.I. Joe who was also a pro wrestler. And so last year for the holidays, he sent me a whole bunch of different Sergeant Slaughters, and from really rare ones that you had to mail order to, he made a custom one with like, he just put Sergeant Slaughter's head on like a ninja body. And it was like, Ninja Sergeant Slaughter. And I'm like, oh, wow, he's even rarer because it's never existed. This is he made a kit one. And then the final one he actually had in a diorama. And he even put in a drawing. Nobody's going to see this. Maybe I should take a picture of it for the show notes.
Oh, yeah, cool idea.
But then he put like Sergeant Slaughter's head on like this big, like muscly body. And he called it Sexy Sarge because he doesn't have a shirt on. And then he even included one of the G.I. Joe characters looking down at him saying like, Mary, Mother of God. You know, he's so sexy, he even presses General Hawk. So it was this whole series of different, you know, custom, like from going from rare Sergeant Slaughter to like custom Sergeant Slaughter to like super custom jokey Sergeant Slaughter and saying, you'll like this, jurors, because you love Sergeant Slaughter so much. Here's Sexy Sarge. Very funny. He knows me very well. But this is basically what you're kind of talking about, is like this personalized like diorama type.
Oh, and exactly. And like, yeah, you could construct the diorama, you could what have you. But I was sort of doing like a hunt for components to do something cool when I found those elements, right? And I was like, oh yeah, this light, the shadow box was actually a really good deal. And I've, you know, then just grabbed some modeling clay and went from there.
And this sits on my shelf year round, you know, like that kind of thing is like something that people want to display because it encapsulates their love of a thing.
Yeah, exactly. So the making of something, you got that artifact. It's like it's a symbol.
Yeah.
Let's see. And it's kind of funny. Like we don't do lists a lot, right?
No, we don't.
Not really. So I'm unfamiliar. Another thing that I think is fun, I don't know if I love like paper airplanes and all that kind of stuff. I'm just folding paper. I don't do it as much as I would love to do it. But I actually had fun folding an origami crane recently because I forgot. And we can put a link in the show notes to the YouTube video I used to remind me. Because there's actually like a whole bunch of, I mean, obviously you can go nuts with origami. There's, you know, the different, you know, the traditional things, but like, you know, people are riffing on it and doing, you could, if you search YouTube for origami rocket ships, origami, whatever, I mean, people are trying to do lots of stuff out of it. And, so essentially you get to fold something on a paper, but you can do a lot of things from there, right? You can do, make a mobile out of it. You can, well, just one in and of itself is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's like, it's not like rare, scarce materials, paper, not that hard to get a hold of, instructions how to fold it, not that hard to get a hold of. And yeah, you did it, your hand did touch it. And then you could do other things to affect it, right? You know, glue, glitter, use pens, mark it
draw
up,
on it.
Make yeah. it the Sergeant Slaughter, you know, origami crane. There you go.
Yeah.
Let's see too. And I'm cool with like wandering off script and whatnot too, Jersey, with any of this sure. stuff.
I know these things are on familiar territory.
Yeah.
But no, but we go on to the next thing on the list. But yeah, another modification of the origami thing that I've seen and actually friends have given to me is they'll make like a bunch of little tiny origami things because they know that my wife and I have a proclivity for tiny things, love tiny things. So they made little tiny origami things and they strung them up on a string together so you can hang them from like the window kind of deal. Right.
Oh,
so
that it's
like,
rocks.
Here's like a crane, a turtle, and a fish, and all these different things. And they're just like strung up on a piece of monofilament kind of deal.
That's
just
cool.
So they hang vertically. That's kind of a neat thing that we've got hanging in her office now. So
yeah, that's like a really efficient mobile. Right?
Yeah.
Easier to ship and everything.
yeah.
Let's see.
A wrist rest sock.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, the wrong way to make this, or actually the wrong way to for this to work out, I made like, back before everyone was using, magic mouse pads or whatever. What is this thing? The magic trackpad, whatever, from Apple. I made sort of a keyboard wrist rest and a matching mouse pad thing, right? Mm-hmm. But it was kind of almost like a bean bag, but like flattish. So,
okay.
I happened to find some spare fabric and whatnot, and like they're simple shapes and not that hard to sew.
Right.
So, and it was not like, oh my gosh, who sewed this? I mean, it looked okay, right? Thankfully, the thing is, like, when you sew something, you sew it inside out, and then you flip it the other way. It's like, that doesn't look too bad.
Yeah.
So, again, dry throat. All right.
We're going a lot longer than we usually do. Sorry,
yeah,
Rob.
No worries. So, I filled it with flaxseed. Because I like how flaxseed, it just kind of slides off of flaxseed, It's like kind of has a neat beanbaggy feel.
Mm-hmm.
But washing it is problematic then, right? So actually, if I had like a scented oil and stuff I put in there too, so it smelled pretty good.
Yeah.
And that all worked great until it needed to get washed. And then it kind of cooked the flaxseed.
Okay.
And so, yeah, this kind of thing. So, like, that's something to consider. Like, you may want to use actual, like, some kind of evil plastic or corn-made plastic or whatever to fill it instead.
Or there's the implicit suggestion of, I'll make you another one next year so you can dispose of this one when it's...
Exactly. That one is, yeah, exactly. Not something useful or delicious. But another interpretation of this is, like... you can do one of those. This is more reusable for two different purposes, and this isn't something I've made for a gift, but we've made to have around the house. Which is, you get kind of like a big thick, big sock, and you can put something pleasantly scented in there, or whatever, with some uncooked rice, and it's something that actually, as long as you don't get it like wet. It's something you can totally like freeze or microwave and then use on your neck and kind of relax, tense muscles and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I've made those before. And for especially if you're giving it to a fellow artist, because as somebody who's getting, repetitive stress problems in the left shoulder area, that's super, super useful. Yeah, you throw it in the microwave for like a minute, right? And then suddenly it's heating pad.
Yeah, totally. And it's, pretty easy to reproduce. And if you make big, giant, super heavy sock, whatever, it's not inexpensive to make, right? Mm-hmm. Get some bulk rice. It's not that expensive to use the material. And you could make a bunch or just a few and then, then the components aren't like wasted, right?
Right.
So you can wear socks or just eat rice.
This next one, I really like this one a lot. The idea of making a short song in GarageBand or other iOS tools. Talk about personalization, right? This is something that's literally, I made this only for you. This is for you to listen to, kind of thing. Like, you know, you remember when you were a teenager and you got a mixtape from a girl, right?
Oh, yeah.
Remember how that felt, right?
Pretty
like
great.
How much, yeah, and how much more great would it feel if she wrote you a song, right? And some people have had that experience. Not me, but, you know, some people have. Mm-hmm. I can only extrapolate from the mixtape as to how cool that would feel.
Exactly. It's not that, obviously if you're musically inclined, it's easier, right? If you, if you play an instrument, it's going to be easier, but it could actually be harder because, I mean, if you're coming from studying instruments and whatnot, you can have different expectations of what the minimal task is of making a song.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of, tools that exist that make making noise in a way that is pleasing not hard. And in fact, I mean, yeah, so they have a lot of, it's not like it's a super flexible tool. Like, for instance, one of my favorites is, well, it's a tough call, but I'll just mention Propellerhead has an app called Figure. And it's got a leaning toward it, right? Where it's like, it's not going to, you're not going to produce like a, you know, some symphony or some sort of, you know, death metal song or whatever. But if you want something, you know, mellow to aggressive that has, you know, an electronic feel to it, it still has, it's such a neat app. Like the UI, it's actually, it's one of those situations where they made a lot of complex stuff super approachable and you get to just sort of discover and bump into like, oh, wow, this sounds pretty neat as it kind of loops and you get to keep affecting it by, you know, I'm going to make the bass a different instrument. I'm going to make the bass something different. I'll let the app generate it. Or you know what? I'm going to perform it. Boom, boom, beep, boom, 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 boom. And then it's just boom. That combines with the next thing, right? Well, and I'm saying boo, boo, beep, boo, like that's like your fingers touching the thing. Obviously, however, if you want to do just, you know, what's that guy? Bobby McFerrin? Bobby?
Yeah.
If Bobby you want McFerrin. To do that boo, boo, beep, boop and chest pounding and whatever, and have that music. I mean, you could, GarageBand, you could totally do that. Like one of the instruments in there is a sampler that, that works for, you know, all sorts of good, silly fun, and making easy music. They've got, a lot of, what do they call it? It's the, it's funny how certain labels I just totally space on the instruments that, it's like, there's a different kind of instrument. Like you have the raw guitar where you can, they have a software guitar, but you're performing it. Mm-hmm. And like, even that, like you can set it, not exactly. So it's a software guitar where you can perform it, where you're touching strings and you're trying to simulate playing a guitar, right? Mm-hmm. Or you could plug in an analog guitar and record it. Or you record your voice and you can record, you know, whatever you want. But then they have like both, like they have drums, bass, guitar, and keyboard sort of assisted versions.
I know what you're talking about, and they can sort of like, it's like in like this kind of easy mode.
That's funny. I just hit the wrong thing.
But it can sort of like auto-generate some music that you can layer upon, and you can even like take the auto-generated music and like configure it into like different things, right?
Yes, exactly.
So like you'll like choose like this particular kind of organ, this particular kind of keyboard, and say, now play like a jazzy thing.
Smart guitar, smart keyboard, smart bass, smart, oh yeah, and smart strings, smart drums. Yeah, there you go.
And it just, it'll riff for you. It'll just do some riffing that you can play along with or add to, or like record some of that riff and then re-edit it in your own way. And even while it's riffing, I think you can change some of the parameters of like, speed up the tempo, drop the tempo, make it sharp, make it flat, you know?
Yep. Switch keys. It's playing and all that stuff. And even if that doesn't quite, make sense where you're like, I don't know music theory.
Yeah.
You don't have to, because you can, through trial and error, explore what sounds right to you. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, just, it's not that daunting. It's not like, hey, here's a bunch of raw instruments and a, you know, a giant mixer board. Knock yourself out. It's very guided as far as an experience that's pretty easy to explore.
Yep. I'll attest that as the non-musician of this group. What's Korg's icosylator?
Icosylator is this. It's kind of wild. Like it's basically having smart instruments that are definitely biased more toward like doing some kind of thump thump dance music, right?
Okay.
But like it's based on this this pad. Input device that Korg has had for years, where essentially there's an XY axis that if you move your finger up, it causes a certain a change to the instrument that you're affecting. And if you move it to the right, so like just imagine put your finger as an L and like going up changes the pitch, and then going right changes the frequency of the note hitting, right? So if it go, if you're all the way to the left, it might go boom, boom, boom. And then you go all the way to the right, then it'll go boom, 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 you know, boom, boom, diggity, whatever's mixed in there, right? And if you go up, it will go boom, 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 you know? So like you can easily, just by dragging your finger around, have some interesting effects on the music. It's a pretty fun input device. And mixed with... essentially the ability to produce loops, like, you know, and again, like, you know, I'm below the little touch pad grid thing. It like has, you know, oh, right now I'm affecting the main riff. Right now I'm affecting the drums. Right now I'm, you know, whatever. So you get to,
okay. So you can switch tracks,
and then start affecting them in different ways with the,
interesting. That input. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then there's metal loops to metal drums.
That's, which is something I like because I love to riff on guitar. And it's probably one of my favorite things to do in the universe, actually, is to just pick up a guitar and riff. And it's a lot more fun to do that when there's some kind of drum accompaniment. To again play with it and against it, kind of thing. And for my kind of the music I like and whatnot, I know that there are better and more expensive drum tracking and programming things out in the world, but like the Metal Loops 2 Metal Drums app, as no offense to the makers, it's a cool app, but it doesn't exactly, its look and style does not instill like high confidence, right? I mean, I don't think they emphasized the aesthetics, right? They just sort of went like, yeah, metal, here's a little headbanging guy, you know, do some stuff up and down, and then like now you can do like this drum riff and then break it, you know, go slower and then do this fill and then whatever. But like literally you're just doing pressing up and down on like what, four different, you know, settings, and then like here you go, and then you can like actually turn up the tempo or turn down the tempo, and you can get some very fast drum accompaniment very easily, quickly with that. So like, and I mean like high tempo, like if you want to go like 160 to 200 beats per minute kind of thing.
If you want to do like, oh, what kind of metal is it where like the drum almost sounds like a machine gun where it's just like kind of thing?
There's different flavors of, yeah, there's a lot of cross-pollination that I've noticed, especially in recent years. But like, yeah, so things like, right, I would say power metal has that reputation, you know, and then certainly, speed metal back in the
speed
day.
Speed metal, that's right.
Death metal certainly carries on the tradition, but yeah. There you go, yeah. So there's a bunch of ways to like, you could make some noise through, you know, with no instrument or included instrument, and pretty quickly do some little songs and stuff, and I find that a fun release once in a while anyway, that be fun to make that for someone.
Yep, I agree. This last one I think is my favorite, because this is, talk about intimacy, Custom Journal Podcast for One. I mean, you, anybody listening to this knows we're big fans of journaling, we're big fans of reflection. But also what I like about it is it's something, it's like a very personal way to leave somebody a keepsake to remember you, right? Should, you know, God forbid something happen to you, or, you know, later on in life, inevitably something is going to happen to us all. This is a memento that is like a lot more personal than a photograph, or I would say even a drawing, because it's your voice. Right? And you think about people who you no longer speak to or no longer in your life, and like if you had that relic, it'd be a way to revisit that time and that place with them. It has the potential to be extraordinarily personal, right? Which I think is, we talk about that value that the thing has for the person who you're giving it to, right? Yeah. And like, what kind of things would be in this custom journal podcast?
Well, I mean, it can be, that's wide open. So I suppose to make it a more interesting, like this is something you could do quickly. We, you know, having some creative limitations is right. Only going to help. So I would say, I would consider picking a little bit of a tone, you know, like this is going to be super silly, or this is like really serious, right? I mean, that's probably a good idea, and then that will set you up to just do some, you know, probably, you know, 5 to 20 minute journaling, right?
Yeah.
Probably, you know, 5 to 10 minutes being a sweet spot, I would say.
Yeah.
But because otherwise, it's like, you know, it may be hard to focus, right? So whereas if you're like joking around, you're probably going to start thinking of, oh, you're like, okay, I'm going to be silly. I'm going to remember all the times that we were laughing together this year, and then talk about that, which can actually ebb and flow back and forth between serious and silly. But like even starting out with that limitation, it helps focus, yeah. Right? So
yeah, top 3 things that happened this year, right? That's 10 minutes.
Yeah, there you go. 3 things that happened. Yeah, times you laughed. Maybe talk about a trip you went on with that person, or just your favorite thing about them.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
And if you wanted to go more elaborate or more in, like more time consuming, I knew a guy once who recorded himself reading the Lord of the Rings trilogy for his kids.
Oh, wow.
And he did an audiobook version of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but he was the reader. And I was like, well, why don't you just read it to them? And he's like, yeah, but this way they have it forever. You know, they can always, like, when I'm gone, they'll still have me reading them Lord of the Rings. And if that was a happy memory for them, then they'll be able to pull it out again. You know, so that's something I've thought about in the past. It's like doing an ebook for Anne. But I still
don't
know which
one. Really good idea.
Yeah. Or not ebook, audiobook, I meant. Yeah. Yeah. Because it serves a couple purposes there, right? And then, again, it's very personal, one-on-one kind of thing. So,
yeah, exactly. And obviously, as with anything we make, we can spend as long or as little on this as we want. But overall, these are fairly, I mean, assuming that, you know, depending on, you know, it's assuming some art supplies, or assuming like an iOS device, or, you know, Android with some equivalent stuff, for depending on which one you want to do. But overall, you know, not too wild as far as budget. It's just about picking something you want to do, and setting aside the time.
Yep. Boy, I bet the Leaners didn't realize that they were going to be getting a full-on episode of Lean Into Art in between episodes. Look at
that.
It's
interesting. It's kind of a bonus thing, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I just figured because the holidays being upon us and everything, why not just do a little bit extra this time?
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're going to be able to close it the way we normally do, where we just know the moment when it arrives, or if we close it like a Lean Into Art show, you know, where we say like, hey, if you like this thing, go do this thing. Or I can like just put you on the spot and say, any final thoughts before we go home?
I think when you ask someone who likes to think about things a lot, there's always going to be more thoughts.